part of your other question was, well, you know, why do we do forums and why do we do them alone? Well, again, my understanding around the Wing Chun curriculum and the Fat Do of learning it properly is you use the partners and their energy to give you something dynamic and slightly more unpredictable and less in your control to show you where your mistakes are, to show you where your edge is, to show you where maybe, you know, it's all fine and dandy when you're in a form doing something, but when someone gives you a bit of energy, you lose your balance really quickly, or, you know, you chase hands, or you leave center line, or you get all rigid. And to be aware, oh my God, I get rigid. Geez, where in the form could I go and practice without someone throwing punches at me to relax? Oh, I could do that in first section Silom Tao. So then, after you've done a partner drill and you've learned where your edges are, you go back to the form and you practice it, saying, okay, I'm going to do Silom Tao this time, really focusing on my relaxation. I'm going to let go of everything else and just play this for relaxation so that the next time I go and do this drill with my partner, I'm going to be better in my terms of my relaxation. And then so you go, and then you see that partner again or another one, and they reflect something else to you that maybe, oh, geez, my timing is off, or my sensitivity is a little wonky, or, geez, I keep missing center line, or I keep coming out of my horse, I keep bobbing up and down. And then you say, oh, okay, so now when I go home or practice Silom Tao, now I'm going to focus on just walking the horse and not moving a millimeter out of it and being mindful on that. And then that will improve. And then I go back in the drill again. And so this is the ongoing loop of your teaching, is you're always going into your partners to find out where your edge is. And then you come back to your forms to polish it. Because in the forms, you are in control of the timing and the speed to keep it at a level where you can actually be paying attention to what it is you want to improve.
It's kind of like a dialogue, you'd say, between
yeah. Them. I go back and find out what needs to be fixed, and then I go in my laboratory under my you know, on terms that I can actually improve the thing, and then I come back and test it out in the field again, notice where the new learning is, and there's always going to be new learning, right? Like every time you get better, you keep realizing how much you don't really know, and in some ways, you know, as you get better, your awareness is like, oh my God, I know less and less. So there's this paradox of thinking you don't know, that, like you're actually getting worse, because you're understanding how much there is to know, whereas in the beginning you're sort of ignorant, you don't really know.
So yeah, it also seems like you're saying, so you're not, in with what you're saying earlier, you're not trying to internalize the form in a strict literal sense, you're trying to sort of adapt it and question the form almost. There's sort of, it seems like there's a value of curiosity or inquisitiveness, like you're asking the forms and questions that come from your partner work, and then you... Yeah. That dialogue kind of continues back and forth.
Absolutely. So it's sort of a feedback loop, right? And because the way the curriculum is set up, when you're doing your first form, your exercises more or less correspond to the limits of the form. So most people aren't shifting or stepping a lot or doing a lot of dynamic movement. As a beginner, you're just in your static horse doing basic hand drills, because that supports sort of the stance that you're learning in Silom Tao. Now, obviously, sometimes we play outside the lines, but most of the training should be in a static drill. Or not adding hand drills if I'm just teaching you how to step, that's too much, right? So every time we go from one sash level to the next, then we basically learn a new form, which takes all the things we learned in the previous form, and then we want it to integrate even more. So I won't spend too much time talking about Chum Q. We can do that for another conversation. But when you learn the next form, Chum Q, I want to internalize a really good horse stance that I learned in Silom Tao. I want to learn, I want to take my center line, my straight line, all of those things. I want to bring them with me as I start to step, shift, change my horse, change center line, move, kick, all these things that are basically about balance, which is what Chum Q is about. Right? How do I do all of these things, straight line, center line, timing, sensitivity, et cetera, but now with my horse moving, with me shifting, with me changing center line, with me on one leg, more challenging. Okay, so now we've upped the game. Right? So again, coming back to your question around what's the purpose of the forms, well, you'll do the same thing in Chum Q later on when you're doing more advanced exercises. Like, where do I go back in Chum Q to practice? Oh, hands and feet moving together. Because I sort of need that when I'm doing Chi Sao or I'm doing stepping drills now. Right? You don't need hand and feet coordination when you're in a static horse stance, just doing a blocking punch drill, and just it's just your arms, right? So this is the thing. So the more forms you have, the more you can always go back to, okay, which form is really going to help me with this particular edge I'm noticing in my Chi Sao or my Mai Sang Zhang drills or my whatever it is that includes a partner.
Because something I was wondering, one of the things I was wondering is, you're talking about in this sort of ordered scaffolding kind of sense. So why then would somebody who's a blue sash or a black sash keep playing Sweet Tsun Tao? Why would they, what do they get out of it that's different from the white sash who's beginning to learn those principles and those ways of moving?
They would just be taking it to more deeper levels. So a deeper level of Qigong, a deeper level of relaxation, a more laser beam, razor thin fiston center line, right? That's just a millimeter better than someone else, right? Like, we just shave the advantages, right? But they don't feel small anymore because our sensitivity has expanded so much. Really small things now feel really big, right? Whereas when you first start, you're sort of numb and you don't know it. Like, you need a big signal to get us, oh, something's happening here, right? But when you develop sensitivity, you're like, oh yeah, I feel this balance going just a little bit. I can feel you rocking on your heels like half an inch. Like, there's my hole. Because when you translate this into a fight, because this is a martial art, it's not just an art, it's for many, most people, they want to have some self-defense skills. These are the advantages that I'm going to have against someone who wasn't trained to the same level. Someone might be bigger than me, physically stronger, but I'm going to have all these advantages of sensitivity, timing, more explosive power, better structure of the body, using all the advantages of straight line and center line and hand replacement and supporting ID and all those things that make the Lin Chun system magical. Right? These are the things that I'm going to train because I actually can do something about them. Right? Like, if I'm 5 foot tall, I mean, I'm not going to be 6 foot tall. If, you know, even if I go to the gym and work out, maybe I'll put on some pounds. But, you know, again, the nature of the art isn't to get, you know, bulky and tight. I mean, to become a bodybuilder, it's very different than the nature of our system. You want to be relaxed and have a strong core. So, so sort of like Pilates, like, we want to work the strong internal muscles, right? But on the outside, I don't want to be so armored that I can't feel anything, or so armored that my restriction of movement is so tight, right? So we don't play for those things. The nature of Wing Chun is to not be armored so I can take a beating, right? There's nothing wrong with it. That's just not our fight philosophy. Our fight philosophy is use the structure to not get hit and hit and then get it over with. Now, whether you think that's realistic or not, we can argue about that till the cows come home. I'm just saying that's what the philosophy is. So that's where the training and the curriculum supports that. And on a more practical level, sometimes you don't have a training partner. So what are you going to do? Train your forms, right? Train your forms. You don't have a partner, or you're traveling and you can't go to the club, or you move and there's no school, and still play with your forms. Yeah. I talked about the sort of coded information that's in all the forms. And it's hard to talk about that without a visual demonstration, but some of the movements, and you're familiar with this, are very artificial. And they're not so much oriented towards a martial application, but as a kinesthetic mnemonic to help me remember something intellectually. But I don't say in words. I use the movement to remind me, oh yeah, that's why. So for example, in the Yatching Chang Choi, right? The punching from the heart, we fully extend that punch from the center line, right? Fully extended so the punch is parallel to the floor, right? And I don't know if you know why we in that move, why do we punch parallel to the floor instead of maybe punch head high or sash level high? Do you know? Do you remember?
I would assume straight line, center line.
Well, this is straight line to your head, right?
Yeah.
So why do I want to go crest level, which for me, yeah, if I'm looking in the mirror,
yeah,
my arm is parallel to the floor?
I would think it would have to do with the three principles. It would be the that's the closest point on somebody standing in front of you. Hit them.
Yes.
There so before you could hit them.
That's the quickest way to get contact with somebody. Okay? But if I don't tell you that, then now you know. So the next time you do that, it's like, oh, a reminder. In the fight, this is where I want to aim. If the center line is wide open, don't go headhunting.
Yeah.
Now you can. It's your Wing Chun. But I'm just saying, in terms of pure theory, in terms of the things you have to remember, if you go headhunting, there's a small risk that if someone else is throwing a shot, and that person's throwing a shot down center line, and they're going at your chest, and all other things are being equal, speed, power, you're the one who's going to get hit. So these are the small advantages that we have to remember that are available to us. So in every form, there's several of those embedded in the movements. And if you don't know that, or if you just watch a forum on YouTube or something and no one tells you about this, you're missing, again, the understanding of the training, again, the fat dome. And so that's where you need a teacher, or a good club, and people who have this wisdom passed on to them through their teachers, right? Or else you miss it, right? You can make the same case around yoga. I mean, yoga is like Mick Yoga now. Most people think of it as a physical practice and they miss the real teachings behind the yogic practices. Right? And I'm not a yogi or anything, but there's a couple of things I do know is that, you know, the physical asanas in yoga were meant to move the body through a sequence of things so that it would help them calm the mind so that they could go sit on their meditation cushion. Right? But people are all like, oh, I want to get the flexibility or the strength. That wasn't why they did that. It's a benefit they got out of it. The purpose was they intuitively knew if you want someone's monkey mind to quiet down, move the body strenuously for a while with mindful breathing, and then the mind slows down and shuts off. Then you can now easily transition into a sleep meditation. Okay, but if people don't tell you that, then you just go and you do your class and you're looking all good in your Lululemons and you're getting great benefits, but you're missing the deeper point. And so that's the same thing in many of the forms. You know, like now in our culture, like we write things down like it's a written curriculum. They didn't do that back then. Or even if they did, they wrote it in idioms. In this sort of poetic, metaphorical, non-linear language that it can have many different meanings. And so the idioms get you to engage them and think about it instead of spoon-feeding it to you. They make you wrestle with it. They make you try and find it for yourself.
And it seems to relate to what you were saying earlier, that you have to go through that struggle. You have to make it something that you embody yourself, because we're all different bodies, we all have different understandings.
Yeah.
So it could be spoon feathers, no?
No, I mean, you can show up and believe that and not be awake, and many students want that. They're like, oh, you're the teacher, tell me what to do. And in the beginning, I have to show you the movements. So yeah, but once you have the movements or the structure or the understanding, then you got to go a little deeper. And then say, why am I doing this? And this doesn't make sense. And you have to ask yourself, yeah, but there is a reason. And it's your job is to try and figure it out. And you trying to figure it out is what builds those neural pathways of deeper integration and understanding. Right? If I keep spoon feeding you, I'm going to create a lazy mind. And then if I die or if I disappear, you're going to be lost because I didn't teach you how to learn. Right? My job isn't to keep you dependent on me. My job is to free you of me. I hope you still hang around, but that you don't need me for those reasons. You may need me for other reasons. But not for those reasons. By the time you've learned, you know, your 4 or 5 years and you've gone through the whole curriculum, you should be able, in theory, to teach yourself, to figure things out. All you need is a couple training partners and explore, and you'll find the answer if you are persistent. So again, this talks to the bigger purpose of, you know, not just this forum, but the whole martial arts practice, and traditional martial arts especially, is this development of the whole human being. I'm teaching you to grow up. I'm teaching you to be engaged in your own life. I'm teaching you to learn how to feed other people instead of just be fed. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm teaching you to be empowered and engaged, that you are your own master if you will just allow yourself to wrestle with these experiences and come to it on your own.